Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America. The state of the race.
Welcome to the state of the race. It is June 26th, 2024. 19 days till the Republican National Convention, 54 days until the Democratic National Convention, and 132 days until the election. Not to mention, tomorrow is the first debate. Coming up, we take a pre-debate snapshot of the state of the race. We look at a really stupid debate op-ed by Hillary Clinton, and New York Times polling averages out. We are going to focus on the seven big swing states. But let's start with our key metrics. First of all, the Real Clear Politics average. This is going to give you the most basic average of the polls. And right now, the national average is Trump plus one. 538 has their forecast out, and they have Biden at a 51% chance to win. 51% chance for Biden. Over at DDHQ, much more positive for Trump, a 58% chance for Donald Trump to win, according to DDHQ and The Hill. And over at the prediction markets, Polymarket has Donald Trump at a 60% chance to win. Let's do our quick candidate updates. And we start with the Trump VP pick. Look, every time I hear another story about the Trump vice presidential pick, I kind of just, laugh because Trump loves the drama of this. Like he and his team are leaking things to the press. He's saying different things. He's contradicting himself. One day he says he's made the pick. The next day he hasn't. Now they're saying the final three has been sort of outlined. And those three, according to NBC News, Trump is focused on Doug Burgum, J.D. Vance, and Marco Rubio as his VP search enters the home stretch. And we won't go too much into depth on this because we're going to fully analyze this as we get closer to the conventions. But I mean, Burgum, I don't fully understand. He has a lot of money. People say he's a low risk candidate. But remember, he's never been tested on a stage like this. He's pretty much an unknown quantity completely just a few months ago. So to say that he's a safe pick to me is really questionable. We don't know what kind of guy this is when he's under the pressure that he's going to be under on a Trump ticket. I think you'd say the same for J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio. Both of them, Marco Rubio certainly has already gone through a presidential campaign and has been in the media for a long time. J.D. Vance comes from sort of a media background. He knows how to do this. And, you know, he may have his up and down moments, but you know what you're getting with J.D. Vance. Marco Rubio, a lot of people are saying could be the safest pick, maybe the guy who can bring in some of the Hispanic voters, someone who can bridge the gap to the more establishment wing of the Republican Party, where maybe Trump isn't all that strong. And then J.D. Vance is interesting from he would be a bulldog, when it comes to going on television and defending Donald Trump, and maybe is the clearest path to a legacy for Trump policy-wise after he's gone. Vance, almost lockstep, is in line with Donald Trump policy-wise and has a sort of intellectual basis behind it. It would be interesting to see if that is a thought for Trump because, honestly, like, he's probably not winning or losing the election based on this pick. So what should probably be in his mind is what he wants after his run is over. What does he want to leave for the country? And that's probably the way that pick should be made. But Trump, of course, has his own ideas and he gets to make the pick really based on whatever he wants, whatever he thinks is going to help him win or whatever he thinks will best serve his legacy. Donald Trump will be talking at a Bitcoin convention in July. I bring this one up largely because Trump was not a pro-Bitcoin guy when he was president. He wasn't, I wouldn't say, a really hard anti-crypto Bitcoin guy, but He often said things like, I don't really believe in Bitcoin. I don't, I believe in the dollar. Anything that weakens the dollar, I'm against. And he seems to have really come around. Now, that might be that he wants support from Bitcoiners and crypto people. It might be that he likes those donations. It might be that he's just changed his mind on the issue. But whatever it is, it seems like he's embraced the world of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. Over to Joe Biden. Young voters are backing Joe Biden over Trump by a 23-point margin. Normally, when you hear a number like that, oh, okay, that sounds pretty good. This is according to a new poll. Pretty good if you're a Biden supporter or fan or Biden himself. You'd be happy by that number. But that number is actually way down from what he normally would get with voters that are young. And this is something that has been slipping for him for a while. And it is down considerably from 2020, where this is sort of a runaway for Joe Biden. We also have news from Hillary Clinton, and I couldn't leave this out because she claims she's the only person who's ever debated both Trump and Biden, which is probably true. It just, I don't know why it's something you'd brag about per se, but okay, she wants to write an op-ed. She wants to keep herself in the news. And she tells you right off the bat in the op-ed why she's writing the op-ed. It's got nothing to do, of course, with the actual election or the debate or anything other than the fact she wants to promote her crap. She starts it like this. Last week, I had the time of my life at the Tony Awards introducing a song from Suffs, the Broadway musical I co-produced about the suffragist who won women the right to vote. I was thrilled when the show took home the awards for Best Original Score and Best Book. From Suffs to Hamilton, I love theater about politics, but not the other way around. She might be the most annoying person in the world. I don't know. This is separate from the state of the race, I suppose. But man, she is brutal. Her shtick is so terrible. Also, the other way around, I love theater about politics, not the other way around. So you don't love politics about theater? I think she's trying to say she doesn't want theater in politics, but of course she butchers the line. Her two issues here, she tries to kind of point out a point about Trump and a point about Biden. Her point about Trump is it's a waste of time to try to refute Mr. Trump's arguments like in a normal debate. I mean, that it's your job. I mean, this might be why you lost if you think it's a waste of time to actually try to win the arguments. She says it's nearly impossible to identify what his arguments even are. He starts with nonsense and then digresses into blather. Hillary, this is a person you lost to. Okay, so you might want to not say he's horrible at this because you lost to him. And if he's horrible at it, what are you? She does go on to talk about Biden. She says Biden, the president, also has facts and truth on his side. He led America's comeback from a historic health and economic crisis with more than 15 million jobs created so far, which is just an absolutely comical thing to say after saying the facts are on your side. Everyone knows what you're doing here, Hillary. Everyone knows that you're measuring from the very low of COVID rather than trying. I mean, it's like it's just embarrassing to say that that's a fact. She says incomes for working families are rising. Yes, they are rising for a lot of the time slower than inflation. She says inflation is slowing. That's how she summarizes the Biden term. Inflation is slowing. And slowing from what? Slowing from the Biden inflation, the Biden inflation, the thing that screwed up the country. The fact that it's slightly slower than the worst of all time is not something you brag about. But she says he will win if the story of his presidency comes through. And I would say the exact opposite. If this election is about his presidency, he will lose. If it's about how evil Donald Trump is and that he's basically Hitler or whatever they're going to say this week, then he has a chance of winning. And finally, before we go, today's focus. Interesting information out from the New York Times. And the Times, you know, look, there's a lot of problems with the New York Times. We all know that many times they're biased in their reporting, of course. But their data department is not bad. Nate Cohn is pretty good with this stuff. And they've decided to put together a polling average that shows right now a very, very tight race. Not going to give you too much information other than it's 46 to 46. So they're not saying either one is ahead at this point, basically a tie. One thing that's interesting about this And this is something we've talked about going back many elections now. There are multiple ways to look at polls. You can look very, very closely at them. You can look at them broadly. One thing, though, has been pretty dependable in that picking a random poll that comes out and trying to claim that is the story of the election puts a lot of faith in that one individual poll. And one of the ways that the polling industry has tried to account for this over the years is a polling average. We know this is, you know, I went over some of them at the beginning. Real Clear Politics does it. 538 does it. New York Times does it. And that has always been a slightly more reliable measure because you're getting sort of an average. You're kind of getting the sample size way up. You can kind of get a better picture as to what you're looking for in the upcoming election. Now, it's very easy in retrospect to go back and find the one poll that was more accurate than the average. And there are, of course, going to be polls that are more accurate than the average. But to get a generalized sense, you don't know in advance which poll that is. So to get the generalized sense, you look at the average. And that's usually been a pretty good way to do it. Even if you do it in a simple way, you take a bunch of polls, you average them out, you get the average, it's a little bit more accurate, or at least the chances are it's going to be a little bit more accurate. The problem with this is, and this is talked about in the methodology of the post that explains all of this from the New York Times as they're putting this together, that is starting to change. And the reason it's changing is a couple of things that you know about the media landscape right now. Number one, a lot fewer media companies that have any money. So a lot of these places are running out of money. A lot of these places are firing people. A lot of these people are places are going out of business. A lot of these places were the ones running the polls. So now there's fewer of these high quality polls. To fill in those gaps, what is happening is cheaper online polls. Not the kind that, you know, you just see on like Twitter where anyone can vote. Scientific versions of those polls, however, where they're not necessarily a random sample. They're done in different ways that wind up giving you not exactly a true random, because the true random old school polling is much harder to do because people don't answer their phones anymore. And also is a lot more time intensive. So what people are doing are there's just a flood of these cheaper online polls, partisan polls, polls from pollsters without real records. And when you just start averaging out these polls, you're starting to take so many lower quality polls and averaging with the higher ones that you might be at, we might be at a point now where the averages are actually going to be less reliable than maybe a high quality poll can be. And again, high quality polls still miss all the time. This is art. It is science, but it's also art. And it is important to understand these are not precise measures. They give you a generalized sense of what is happening. So what does that mean here? In 2022, for the first time, the polling averages actually performed worse than high quality individual polls. So that's something to think about as you go forward and try to pick this apart. And we will dive into this as we go forward as well. But let's go through a quick picture of where the New York Times sees this right now. And you know the Times, you know they're liberal. But again, I think their data department is one of the better departments in the New York Times. I don't trust a lot of their other reporting. But here's what they say about these seven big swing states. Wisconsin, Donald Trump plus one, 47 to 46. Michigan, Donald Trump 48, Joe Biden 46. That's Trump plus two. In Pennsylvania, Trump plus two. Nevada, Trump plus four. Arizona, Trump plus three. Georgia, Trump plus four. And North Carolina, Trump plus five. Now, all of these states, every number I just gave you, they have had polling errors larger than the margin between the two candidates, with the one exception of Georgia. Georgia has had pretty good polling over the past few years, but we have not seen a miss that would necessarily turn around the race. Both Nevada and Arizona are very close to that line as well. But really, Georgia's the only one that, you know, you might be able to take to the bank if you believe past polling. The point I'm making here is all of these are really, really close. you can't really say for sure that one candidate is way ahead. You know, just a normal polling error could easily switch all of these states, if not all of them, most of them, and plenty to win the election to Joe Biden. But if you take all these as gospel, you look at these polls and you say, this is the state of the race. We believe these seven results. You would have an election that finalized at Trump with 312 electoral votes and Joe Biden at 226 electoral votes. That is, in a way, the state of the race right now. We finish up our segment here today with a totally made-up scorecard feature in which I use vibes and polling and guessing and how I feel about if the election were held today, who would win. And right now, if the election were held today, I would have Donald Trump at a 57% chance of winning. That's down a little bit from where I had it a couple of weeks ago. The polling has tightened a little bit. And honestly, I expect at some point Joe Biden to have a lead, maybe a clear lead at one point. That doesn't mean he's going to win, but I expect this to go back and forth a little bit. We will see if that's true. Now, one thing we do know for certain, the election will not be held today. If the election is held, when the election is held, my estimate right now is Donald Trump is a very, very slight favorite. I've got it at 51%. The reason why is...
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Because he's still winning, but I don't know that the future necessarily points to Trump holding that lead the entire time. And we, of course, have a debate coming up tomorrow. So the story could completely change as of tomorrow. Who knows? I mean, we could very easily see a situation where, Donald Trump bites the head off of a bat on stage and Joe Biden takes out a sleeping bag and falls asleep in the middle and drools all over himself for 45 consecutive minutes. I don't know what's going to happen in this debate, but I wanted to take a snapshot before we got there. We'll have some debate preview stuff, and I want to tell you, Blaze TV's got a great lineup for debate night. I will be there as well as Jill Savage sort of hosting it, but we're going to be moving around to tons of experts, great guests, really good commentary. Everybody from Glenn Beck and Jason Whitlock, Sarah Gonzalez will be there. I've got some laughs from Dave Landau. I mean, it's going to be a really, really fun night. And you can join with Blaze TV, blazetv.com/stew. The promo code there is stew if you'd like to get involved and save some cash as you subscribe to Blaze TV. We really use your support because I can tell you, the mainstream media is not going to give you the coverage that you want. I think we can do that for you. So we will have more State of the Race in this feed. Stay right here. If you go to youtube.com/stewdoesamerica, you'll not only get my show, but you'll also get pre-coverage, probably a pre-game sometime during the day on Thursday, and a post-game after all the coverage is over on Blaze TV. We'll chime in, get some of your questions, any comments that you have over on the YouTube page. Don't miss any of that. It's going to be a really crazy next few days. Join us at Blaze TV and on youtube.com/stewdoesamerica and right here on State of the Race.